Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. Today, Disrespect introduces
Professor of Social Science and Chair of the Department of Interdisciplinary Studies at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan, Dr. Stuart Henry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You promoted an idea.
Constitutive criminology is made up of many constituent parts. So it's basically talking about a whole that's made up from the parts. And what it, further than that, it's taking the view that crime and the whole idea of crime and justice is embedded in and bound up with society rather than being something that is the provenance of a particular individual. Our view is you can't extract the individual from the social, cultural, structural context of society. In dealing with crime, you have to deal with the individual in relation to the societies that they're of.
So behavior is a plant, and it grows in a garden, and the garden is society.
That's true.
Okay.
Yes. And as of the plant is part of the society, and so the earth that it grows in is in part some of the individual plant, and that's that.
The two are inseparable.
It's an inseparable symbiotic relationship. Therefore, if we try to treat the plant, that is, the human agent, the individual, separately from the nutrients and the soil that it is embedded in, you're going to fail. And that's how we do it in criminology, in criminal justice. We try to extract the person and say, right, we can do all these things to you because you've done all these things to us, and we've neither understood why those things have occurred as a total mix between that plant and its environment, and we've not enabled ourselves to deal with the ways to intervene and make a difference.
Right.
We end up messing with the plant, putting it back in the same piece of soil and nutrients that it came from.
Yeah, and then we're surprised when they reoffend.
When it redoes all the things it did before, exactly.
Yeah. The concept of constitutive criminology caught my eye in relation to a term that has a special meaning for me because it's the title of my show, Disrespect. A lot of it is unrecognized and often meets with a response, well, you know, this is your condition, this is your society, you know, make the best of it, and now stop bothering us, we have some money to make or whatever, you know. And does the term disrespect apply to constitutive criminology?
Central to our notion of what counts as crime.
Right.
We take the view that crime is based, we've defined it, crimes are people being disrespected.
Right.
In various kinds of ways. So in disabilities, or people with disabilities are being, if treated in various ways, are being disrespected by being seen as or treated as less than. But that would be true, too, if you were being treated in similar ways because of race or gender or for that matter, because of money, because of morality, because of a whole range. You can do an N number of different ways. Because each of these ways are society's social construction. That doesn't mean that they're meaningless, that they're just arbitrary. It means that we treat them as though they're very significant and values of our society. And at the same time, people who are judged against those standards are judged as either meeting them, exceeding them, or less than them.
Yes.
And therein lies the crime. When you start to treat people less than, what you're really doing is disrespecting them by denying or preventing them becoming fully social beings. And that's the key issue. Whether it's taking money from them, taking property from them, taking biological functioning from them, or taking their identity and standing from them, taking something away from them that would prevent them from becoming fully social beings is a crime.
That's a subtext of the show. From time to time, people ask me, I can't get my wheelchair fixed. You know, why don't you deal with that on your show? Or housing's a poverty issue. It's not a disability issue. And the show response has been out of instinct and not out of the kind of groundwork that you've taken so much trouble and time to lay, that out of instinct I have to say, well, poverty is also a disability issue, you know.
Exactly.
And wheelchairs may be a disability issue. We feel that those issues are, if not adequately addressed, they're better addressed than the fact that someone with a disability may presume to start their own business. Someone may just take a look at them and say, you can't start your own business, you're disabled.
That's
and
right.
Go from there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. The judgment made against a person in that manner is part of the what we call discursive practices that reduce them from being fully able. It's not that they're not potentially fully able in a variety of differing ways.
Yeah.
It's that by laying that description or discourse or that summary label on them, they are reduced immediately from being able to have access to a whole range of possibilities because they're channeled and narrowed into this particular box. And that produces what we call, whichever category we're in, whether it's disability or all the other forms, that produces in them a harm, an experienced harm.
Mm-hmm.
And so from our point of view, it's that form of harm rather than the actual loss of money itself or property, whatever. It's that narrowing of the potential of both the... We come up with two categories. One is called crimes of reduction, and mm-hmm. the other is called crimes of repression.
Right.
Crimes of reduction reduce someone from what they are
yes.
to a less than status.
Yes.
Crimes of repression prevent them from becoming what they could otherwise be.
Yes. Ah, that's interesting. That's the whole gamut of crimes against people with disabilities in two categories.
Exactly.
It's not obvious, probably, to many listeners until they've listened to the show for a while, that we do have a lot in common with other disenfranchised groups. Where did you ever get a handle on an idea like this?
Well, you know, it's very interesting you should say that. I did some original research back in England in the 70s, and mid-70s, late-70s, on a whole range of what were seen as health issues.
Yeah, right.
These were ranging from alcohol to drug abuse to mental health to depression, forms of mental health, and believe it or not, disability. So it's very interesting that you would pick this up in a disability, because I was looking then at what people with problems, what are people with problems suffering, and what is it that, why do people with problems seem to not benefit particularly from the services available to them offered by professionals.
Right.
And what I found through doing this and through looking at when they provide them their services for themselves, that is through mutual aid and self-help,
yeah.
I found that they were actually getting a great deal of satisfaction through the alternative modes than they were for those folks who were there actually paying to produce it. So why was that? What was happening? Well, the fundamental issue that came out of that original self-help mutual aid research was that they were getting respect from the people that were problem sufferers like them.
Yeah.
And it was people with problems who understood what it was like to be harmed through this, what we call an investment in power, the power of difference, because that's what we see crime as. And this whole idea sort of emerged and didn't immediately come through, but when we started looking at crime and from a criminological perspective, there was this underlying similarity here, that what was occurring to people was that some were exercising their power over others to deny these others their own ability, what we call ability to make a difference,
right.
which is what we equate to humanity. People's humanity, which is the essence of what it is they're losing, is their ability to make a difference to the world around them and to others in ways that don't at the same time dominate, suppress, or harm others. So we came up with, what is a criminal? We all know what a criminal is. A criminal is an excessive investor in the power to deny others their humanity.
Right.
In whatever form that is.
So to you and Dr. Milovanovic, mm-hmm. this is the definition of a criminal.
That's correct. It applies equally to whether you've got a street robber with a gun or you've got a guy in an office who's sexually harassing the women. They're investing in their power over the other to deny that other their humanity.
What I get now is that you're not denying the crime of sexual harassment or robbery at gunpoint, but what you're saying is it's rooted in a prior crime, which is the perception of the victim as less.
That's correct. The perception of the victim as less, but also the production of the victim as less.
Oh,
that
yes.
The investor makes the human less in the instant and the act of taking that away from them.
Right. That's profound.
Disrespect breaks without its favorite piano blues. To remember Curtis Mayfield, whose birthday is June the 3rd. Curtis died the day after Christmas in 1999 at the age of 57, but he inaugurated politically charged soul. He's also said to have heavily influenced modern pop and hip-hop. Curtis Mayfield. We've been listening to Professor Stuart Henry of Wayne State University talk about crime and disrespect.
So you've been developing this since the 70s?
Yes, inadvertently then, because I wasn't even particularly looking at crime at that early stage. I met Dragon, never knew him before, met him at a conference in 1988. And we just talked about some new developments that are going on, what we call postmodernist criminology, where, it started with a six-page article in a newsletter, and then it grew to an academic article and chapters in books, and now we've probably certainly got two books out on the topic and numerous articles and chapters.
Why don't you tell us while we're on the subject
what
the books are?
One's simply called Constitutive Criminology.
And what's it focus on?
Well, that is lays out the theory. The first volume was published by Sage.
All right.
In 1996.
All right.
And the one that you've got with a similar title is called Constitutive Criminology at Work.
All right.
And the and that was people who'd been working in research operations, doing their studies of prison and doing the studies of law breaking and so on. And they each had adopted, came to view the theories valuable, so they applied the theory themselves. So it was a collection of their different takes on applying constitutive theory, published by SUNY Press, and that was 1999.
All right. Do you want to tell us about some examples of the advancement of teaching this concept and any acceptance that it has had or any resistance that it has had?
Well, yes, very interesting, because it came from I'll go with the resistance first, but it came from postmodernist perspectives,
yeah.
Which is often seen as very radical from the mainstream. The biggest resistance was from the mainstream criminologists who saw this as beyond the pale and way too impossible to implement or to do anything with, because they couldn't typically run the normal standard positivistic tests on it and see if it proved that crime changed or reduced or so on and so forth. But I think the more interesting question is, well, what is its practical application? It's one thing to see the inside of a kind of new way of approaching crime and as harm and power, which is really what it is that we presented. But, okay, you can see that, then what do you do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most exciting developments are what we call replacement discourse. Replacement discourse,
right.
Which the irony of which is that the very thing that your program does is what we advocate as a means of transformation. We've done it, we've talked about it in the context of news media, as news-making criminology, film production and film-making criminology, and your very programs that talk to folks who may be listening as talk shows and so on. There's a standard format part of our culture for producing these, and there are very few that do the kind of thing that yours does and some of these other folk do. And what it basically means, to replace in discourse, is it means if we take the view that the standard package of crime views and talk is produced through existing media by talking about crime in the ways I started out saying as an individual offender that needs to be fixed or rehabilitated or punished and so on. What you miss is the how we are all co-producing that. So how
right.
do you stop co-producing it? What do you do about a culture that is providing the bedrock, the cloth to create crime from?
Right.
Well, you've got to start making the cloth, you've got to do it in a different way. And what we believe is by taking reframing and re-describing the kind of ways people exist in the world in ways that are that displace the standard separation of humans from the totality of society, that you can change the way in which people interact with each other.
So by describing the process of displacement or disenfranchisement, you make people aware?
Yes.
And this creates change?
Right. Yes. Oh. You can deconstruct their existing world and in the process transform their identity within the world that they inhabit by having them more empowered to change the folks that they engage with day to day.
So you're talking of this now as addressing the disenfranchised particularly.
But indeed, most people here are disenfranchised, either whether they're the excessive investor in power who appear to believe they're gaining from that investment,
yes.
or they're the victims, which we call the recovering subjects, who've lost faith in humanity as a result of their, not wholly, but have had it somewhat tainted as a result of their victimization through others' use of power against them. What does the investor lose?
Yeah, the person who's investing in reducing other people's power.
They lose their connection to the species, believing that they can be satiated in the accumulations that they've gained from putting others down.
Uh-huh.
So theirs is an empty reward that never is satiated. So they don't necessarily believe that they're losing. They just never satiate it in the acquisition of more of these power claims over others, the more accentuations of differences and benefiting at others' expenses.
So in fact, the proof of their loss lies in the demonstration of their ongoing and endless need for gain.
Yes.
Wow.
Exactly right. That's exactly. Couldn't have put it better. Now, if you want concrete, practical examples, how is this actually taking place? There was a criminology student once back in the 70s who was called Mimi Silbert, who was at the Ber- she set up a foundation with for ex-offenders, or people who wanted to recover. Interesting, she uses that concept,
yes,
from drug, alcohol, and crime. And that was called Delancey Street in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very well publicized. You may have heard of it, and it's certainly been in a lot of media in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's 15,000 people have gone through this program.
Right.
And what it basically is no service is provided other than by the offenders themselves. The offenders become active in their own, traditionally you'd say, rehabilitation.
Right.
But this is beyond rehabilitation, because rehabilitation is about treating people.
This is about reinvention.
That's right. That's exactly the word. In fact, what they do is reinvent their own identity, substitute, talking of replacement discourse, a whole narrative discourse about themselves, or stories about themselves,
yeah,
that replace, that transforms who they are. From,
yeah,
being losers and dependent or being predatory, they become helpers of others in similar situations to themselves. And this place has generated its own resources. It runs its own shops. It's built its own complex. It's running something to the tune of $20 million that it generates, takes no funds from anybody.
Are you serious?
And I'm serious. It runs Christmas tree operations, a removal company with never having anything stolen. It runs a restaurant, a bistro. If you ever in San Francisco, go to the Delancey Street Bistro and Shop Complex. It's served by the inmates, but they're not inmates. It tends to be a 4 to 6 year residential program, which, of course, instead of being sitting in a prison and doing nothing, what you're doing is actually learning basic skills, GED, they learn building trade skills, they get qualifications, and then they go to work, not only helping others who are new, just like most 12-step program type operations coming into the program, but they also actually start working in the various projects that Delancey offers, to the point that after 4 to 6 years, they become self-sufficient and leave. Now, in terms of recidivism rates or reoffending rates, there's not been a lot of research done on it, despite the fact it's been gone for over 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But it the claims that are made by Delancey, and you go on their website, Delancey Street has got this superb website that outlines their accomplishments. So if anyone's interested in getting some real meat and flesh on this with photographs as well,
right,
go to their website. Search on Google, it's a Delancey, I don't know the exact thing, but it's just Delancey Street,
good,
San Francisco. Now, interestingly, they've also expanded, I think, to 4 or 5 other states.
How would you advise someone who is experiencing destructive, repeated harm of this kind to respond to it in a way that would help to change not only the transaction, but change their reality? Do you have an answer for that?
Well,
it's a tough one.
It is. And you can imagine part of my response is that you need to do this together with others, because to do it alone, the power of the other is so institutionalized, both at the societal level and the local institutional level, that you've typically got everything from individuals and corporate structures to organizations that are set up to, ironically and sadly, to reinforce the existing harm production. Not because they want to plan to do it that way, but that's the very way our society tends to be established, that it works along hierarchical rules. So you have to actually form a base that's separate from that with others who are in a similar situation. So you go back to the mutual aid self-help operation I was talking about, which again is what really Delancey Street is. You cannot work easily within that without having enough to replenish and support your independence to be able to stand against it.
What would you like to say at this time as we pretty much conclude the interview?
One of the first interviews I ever did, which was, interestingly enough, with a person with a physical disability. And I was a naive young researcher, and I wanted to know how he struggled every day with this disability, given the way the society was set up, and how did he feel being disabled? And
yeah,
he pointed out to me that once he was in recovery from what was defined by society as disability, what he said to me was, "We're not disabled. The people are disabled are the folks who never had to confront and deal with a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the disabled of society." And that message stuck with me forever. And it's the very people we're talking about as these excessive investors. Those are the disabled of society, the people who don't yet see that that's not the way to their own happiness.
Wow. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Take care, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
We've been listening to Professor Stuart Henry of Wayne State University talk about crime
and disrespect. You heard Curtis Mayfield from Curtis in Chicago and Preacher Man. And now Curtis Mayfield from the album Heartbeat, Victory. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. To find out what we plan for the show, go to www.calendric.com/disrespect. That's CALENDRIC, www.calendric.com/disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.